is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The markets watch, the markets plan. Tax day. I welcome Elizabeth Peake, columnist at The Hill, columnist at Fox News, much on Fox Business, to comment on tax day in the blue state of New York. New York City recovering from the pandemic. New York City with a just elected governor, Kathy Hochul, in Albany. New York City with a dominant story of recovery that needs people to come back to Manhattan. Why? Because the office buildings remain patchy empty during the week. Maybe nobody going to work on Friday, everybody working from home. You can see this in statistics at the subway stations, the big ones, Grand Central, for example, or Union Square or 42nd Street, where the ridership is 30 to 40% of what it was in 2019. But the real tell of tax day in New York State is a chart that I have from Bloomberg. A very good evening to you, Liz. Thank you very much. The Bloomberg chart is stark. It says that the exodus of the wealthy from large states that tend to be dominated by the Democratic Party is vast, and New York is, not happily, number one at $80 billion. Said to have left cumulative taxable income left from New York. And you for some time have illustrated why that's true. And there does not appear to be any will in Albany to alter the landscape. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, look, I live in New York, and I can guarantee you that half my friends at least have moved to Florida, and it's because of taxes. It's quite clear that if you set up residency in Florida, you're much better off than you are in New York. And I got to tell you, not everybody wants to leave New York. People do so unwillingly and unhappily because New York life is very vibrant, very exciting. All kinds of things that are culturally wonderful take place here. But, it simply has gotten too expensive, John. And that has just such cataclysmic fallout for so many different sectors of the city. It means property prices are going down. The value of condos and co-ops have declined. It's very hard to sell right now a high-end co-op or condominium because there are just not that many wealthy people who want to come to New York and expose themselves to the ruinous taxes. And so, you know, there was a long-standing battle when Mike Bloomberg was mayor of this city. The progressives in Albany, and there always have been progressives in Albany, were pushing him year in, year out to raise taxes on the wealthy. And I remember him clearly saying on more than one occasion, look, there are about 40,000 families that pay the bulk of the taxes that keep this city going. Every time one leaves, it is a dent to our budget. And so now we are seeing that dent enormously realized as so many families have moved out. And of course, there are many aspects to this. It's not just taxes. It's also because COVID and the experience of working remotely proved you don't have to be here in the city. And that, I think, it has taken a while for legislators to realize that is not a temporary phenomenon. Yes, you have companies like Bloomberg, Blackstone, and others pushing their employees to be in the office 5 days a week. But those are companies that have big real estate holdings in New York. They are very concerned about the situation vis-a-vis commercial real estate and the fact that with empty office buildings, eventually people are going to start losing a lot of money on those empty buildings. There already have been a couple of bankruptcies and more will follow. And the fallout from empty office buildings is all the little businesses, all the shoeshine guys and the delis and all the people that support that vast a number of tall office buildings on 6th Avenue or in Midtown, all of a sudden they're not in good shape. They're losing revenues, people are fleeing, et cetera. So, you know, it's a tremendous drain on the local economy. And I think legislators are blinded by the fact that they had years of supersized federal revenues plugging their budget holes and also, very good stock market years. Remember, people made a lot of money in the stock market despite COVID 2021 and the capital gains taxes were a big help to the New York City budget. I think this year is when all of this comes home to roost, and I think legislators are going to look at a monster hole in the New York budget going forward, and they have only one solution, John, how to plug it, and that is to raise taxes. So, you know, I think it's a death spiral, and we've seen this happen in other cities. It doesn't get better.
Yes, to finish out the Bloomberg chart for what exodus of the wealthy from blue states means, I said New York was at $80 billion left. California is second at $50 billion approximately. Illinois is third at a little less than $50 billion, maybe $48 billion. Those are the top three exodus states. One thing that hasn't left New York are the big banks. We're going to turn to banks because part of the problem in New York and California and elsewhere is the unknown of rising interest rates. The headline in the Wall Street Journal tells the warning. Few banks are hedging interest rate risk. Subhead, a recent paper focuses on how banks handle rising rates. Liz, rates are rising, have been for a year, sharply. And there is another meeting coming up in May where the presumption is that Mr. Powell and the governors will move one more time to raise interest rates a quarter point. I believe that'll put us in around 5.2. But those interest rates have caused already disorder in banking and doubts about the future in banking. Do you measure that these interest rates now will pause because there's gamblers all coming up to the, you know, like the front of a track to see how the horses are running, saying one more and that'll be it because there's a recession at hand. Do you foresee that one more and done, or is it going to be what Mr. Powell said some time ago? We move with the data.
Well, I think they do move with the data. And the question is it going to get much worse? Of course, the one element that they have been waiting for is a weakening jobs market. And I think we're just beginning to see that happening. If you look at the four-week moving average of unemployment claims, for example, it has finally begun to turn up. It's still pretty low, but you don't always – jobs are also a coincident indicator. That is to say, they don't lead a recession. A recession pretty much happens and job losses flow. So I think we have to be very attuned to the fact that layoffs have increased. There's no question. There's a private group called the Challenger Group that measures that, and I think layoffs in the first quarter were like four times what they were a year ago. So all the headlines we all have been reading are true. There are more layoffs. The JOLTS number has come down. The number of job openings has come down from, admittedly, a very exalted level, but nonetheless, the direction is negative. All kinds of readings from the ISM numbers, both manufacturing and service, indicate a weakening of hiring. So I think the jobs market is definitely getting softer. Jay Powell needed that to happen in order to, in order to break the back of inflation. Inflation is cooling. So I think the combination of a softening jobs market and less price inflation mean that there will be a pause in rate hikes. I mean, I frankly think it could happen at the May meeting. And the reason is, you have had this fragility with the banks, and I don't think it's necessarily the case that it's over. I mean, there are still regional banks that have some exposure to higher rates, and the paper that you cite is correct. The banks now, I'm sure, are scurrying around trying to figure out how to hedge these positions in long-dated bonds on which they've taken big losses. But the reality is that's a limited opportunity, and most didn't do it. So the Fed has never hiked rates in the midst of or after the beginnings of a financial crisis. And if you consider two big bank failures something of a financial crisis, I think it's rather risky for them to keep hiking rates. So I think it could pause in May. The risk to Jay Powell and what they're worried about is that inflation just stays at this sort of four-ish number, for the foreseeable future, and they don't really crack that. We'll see. The Fed notes, remember, that the staff thinks there will be a recession in the second half of the year. They're looking for almost no growth this year overall, and we're going to have 2%+ growth in the first quarter. So chances are you're going to get a pause either this meeting or the next, because I think they do see the downturn coming.
I've entertained myself recently listening to the Panic of 1907 book from some years ago by Robert Bruner and Sean Carr, Lessons Learned from the Market's Perfect Storm. Here's the lesson, Liz. Once it begins, you don't know how it's going to end, because there can be a momentary peace. Oh, we've solved this. There's not going to be another run on a bank. This is before there was a Federal Reserve. But then again, something bad happens and it starts all over again with people saying, give me my money. What I learned from this is there's no predicting once the story is out there.
Well, and again, people are rather skittish about that right now. So what could go wrong from here? A lot of people think it'll be commercial real estate for the reasons we talked about earlier. A lot of companies, a lot of banks have big holdings exposure to commercial real estate. And, you know, John, I mean, how long can a building go on or survive if at 30% occupancy? I mean, I think it's a real risk. And so that will be something that all the analysts are burrowing into. Who has the biggest exposure? Who is lending the money, et cetera? But if you have smaller regional banks with big exposure to that sector, that's a problem. The good news, and there is good news here, is that investors have been looking for a recession and problems for months now. And so the actual, if someone just did a survey, and investors' exposure to the stock market right now, their balance between debt holdings and equity holdings is the lowest since 2009. So that tells you people are not loaded up on high-priced stocks that are going to really take a tumble. In fact, they've got a pretty cautious position, which bodes well for the stock market going forward. Is it enough? I don't know. But at least we don't. It's not one of those times when something out of the blue happens, like the failure of a big hedge fund or something, and everybody's loaded up to the gills on high-priced stocks. That's not the case.
What held us together in 1907 was J.P. Morgan, Pierpont himself, sleepless and suffering with a head cold. He held the markets together by badgering and insisting and holding on to the trust company presidents until they ponied up the money. This is before the Federal Reserve. One man saved the markets, all of them, in 1907. We will not come to that in 2023. There are some guidebooks to tell us what is to be done, but still, you don't know how panicky it gets when their bank runs. You just don't know.
And you don't. And it's interesting analogy, right? Because J.P. Morgan, I mean, Jamie Dimon and a few other bankers got together and made all the banks chip in to buy a failing bank. So it's not unprecedented that that happens. And for the same reason, because as you say, it's a little bit like lighting a fuse. How quickly that fuse travels will depend on a lot of things, including people stomping on it early on.
Elizabeth Peake, she writes a column at The Hill, a columnist at Fox News. We're headed to Chicago, the site of the future Democratic National Convention, which at this point assumes it will be celebrating the re-election campaign of Joe Biden. I'm John Batchelor.